It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. If you're looking to install some new windows or a new door, a great place to start with Pella is their showroom. Really cool, and it really helps to sometimes actually see the windows, see the door, open and close them to get a better feel for exactly what you're going to be installing into your home. The showrooms are really, really a good place to start. They got showrooms in Omaha and in Lincoln, so go check them out. Or you can check Pella out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my pals at Runza. Love it when I get these tweets. My guy Cody, I think I played youth basketball with Cody. Love it. He tweeted at me and said, Nick, hit up the Runza super secret menu today. Had pickles put on my Runza. Who'd have thought? Thanks, Nick. Love it, Cody. And all of you need to do what Cody did and take advantage of this super secret menu that Runza has let in my listeners in on, where you can put anything within reason on a Runza sandwich. If you want ranch, go for it. You want pepper jack cheese put on your cheese Runza? Go for it. You want pickles like Cody? Go for it. Every Runza starts as an original Runza sandwich. You can add anything in the kitchen within reason onto your Runza sandwich. Delicious. Fantastic. Get to Runza and try one today. Runza makes it all better. Okay, on tap today for the pod, been a lot of news in the world of Creighton basketball over, I guess, really the past few months, but in particular the last week to 10 days. Creighton has been really active on the recruiting trail after kind of being quiet for a while. Creighton landed 2 4-star recruits in Arthur Kaluma and Trey Alexander, pushing Creighton's recruiting class up to number 5 in the 2020 rankings. 5th-ranked recruiting class for Creighton. It's just, it's amazing. Creighton has a higher recruiting class than like Kentucky does. It's just, it's bananas, right? So there's certainly lots to talk about there. And with all the news and events of the past few months surrounding Creighton basketball, new assistant coaching hires, all the stuff going on with Greg McDermott, all these highly touted recruits, bunch of stuff to dive into. And I wanted to get my guy, John Niatawa, Creighton beat reporter for the Omaha World Herald, on. Certainly tied into the program. Love his insight. Love his basketball thoughts, his basketball mind. This was a great chat with lots to cover. I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy it. So let's get to it. Here is our little Creighton basketball State of the Union with Creighton beat writer, the Omaha World Herald, John Niatawa. Enjoy. All right, on the line now, John Niatawa, Creighton beat writer, Omaha World Herald. John, how is it's officially June. Is summer is upon us. How are things? How's your summer going so far?
Yeah, I'm trying to drop some weight, man. Now that I've kind of hit this summer
shirt taking off.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I got the haircut as well, and I'm just like, things aren't looking good in the mirror, so I need to. I got work to do. You got any tips for me?
Not really. I mean, the problem is like there's things like today. I was like, you know what, I'm going to try to work out today, even though I've been kind of been battling a cold because my daughter got a cold and it just has run through the house. But I don't know if you're. How old is your son?
He's just 1.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, we're almost like we. I mean, Mac is, I guess, 11 months today. Wow. So we almost have the exact same age.
Oh, he's a little bit older. He's like 16 months.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Am I supposed to be specific?
John, you really just committed the biggest sin of when someone asks you, how old is your child? When do we stop going months? Do you go past 2?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean,
it was 1. Well, there's a big difference, though, between 12 months and 16 months compared to like my 11-month-old. You know what I mean? Right? Like, there's a big difference.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So I got confused. Well, I thought we had common ground.
You know? Yeah, I don't think I should do it just yet. Okay. I probably shouldn't have made that jump. Yeah. Maybe age 2.
Okay. Yeah. We'll go, but we'll declare that once they're past 2, you just go years, no more months. But I had one of those nights last night. For whatever reason, my 11-month-old just was like, nope, I don't want to go to bed. I'm just going to be wide awake. And luckily I had Luca and inside the NBA for a little bit, but your boy was up till like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. So like But that's the thing. It's like you have this desire to work out, but then, you know, you are dead tired. And so you just don't work out. You know what I mean?
It's so easy to work those excuses out. And here's the thing. When you've got other priorities, you know, 10 years ago, everything was different.
Yes, now, it was. I know what you're saying. I mean, let's...
Family matters.
So. Family matters. Urkel and Winslow. You know what I'm saying? Too many Urkels on your team. That's why you're Winslow. Shuts out to you. That was one of your... That was one of your points to ponder as you departed Chicken Ick one time. You dropped a Kanye line to us, which I think it went right over Schick's head, but I appreciated it.
Honestly, it was one of those things when I heard him drop that in one of his songs. I don't remember what album that was on, but like I remember it, and I was thinking, how can I use this in life ever? You know? It's just so good.
I mean,
too many Urkels on their team. That's why you're Winslow. And then you guys started, you guys had a show going and we talked about the most random stuff on earth. And
yes, it worked. It worked.
It worked then.
It absolutely worked. So I wanted to bring you on because I don't know if you want to call this like a Creighton State of the Union chat, but like, you know what this is like with what we're about to get into is this is like when you haven't seen someone since like high school or something like that. And They you run into them, they're like, hey man, what's new? And you're like, what do you mean since 2004? Like, what's new since 2004? Like, yeah. I don't even know. Like, what do you mean everything's new?
Like, I actually feel like I've been having a lot of those types of conversations now that everyone's kind of getting vaccinated, the world's getting back to somewhat of sense of normalcy.
Right.
And everyone's like, hey, what's new with you? Well, I had a kid.
Right.
You know, like a year and a half ago, but I haven't seen you in that long.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But that's where
I
it is.
You're coming.
But, you know, for like, if we just take a snapshot of the last 2 or 3 months of Creighton basketball and I go, hey, what's new? It's like, I mean, everything, like literally everything is new. I mean, it's been, I wrote down a handful of things. Let me just kind of like to paint the picture. Because it's been a pretty big roller coaster for the last, you know, 3-ish months. All culminating in a pretty amazing week over the last week for Creighton on the recruiting trail. So a timeline here, just kind of think about. You have the Greg McDermott comments in the locker room using the term plantation in late February. Creighton subsequently loses their top recruit, Ty Washington, which is, I mean, it's been quoted. It was kind of directly tied to that. Creighton then goes on to break a barrier that has never been done in its basketball program history and go to the Sweet 16. But then the entire starting five is leaving. We'll get into more of that in a second. Then Greg McDermott loses his top two assistants. Oh, and by the way, almost lost his third assistant in Al Huss. It was really quiet for a little bit right after the season during kind of the rush of the transfer market. The only player that Creighton had landed was a white Division II transfer, which obviously with the elephant in the room, you're going, oh boy, what's going on here? And Greg McDermott then hires two new assistant coaches, Ryan Miller, Jalen Courtney Williams. Then all of a sudden in a flurry, the sky was falling, but then in a flurry, they land 2 4-star top 60 recruits and Kaluma and Trey Alexander. They get this 6'9 Keyshawn Fizel from McNeese State. And now, wing bang boom, as it sits today on June 3rd, Creighton, yes, Creighton has the 5th-ranked recruiting class on 24/7 Sports. I mean, I don't even, like, did I miss anything?
I think you got it all, man. I don't know. I feel like we need to take a deep breath.
I know, though. That's right. I sat down to, like, okay, how do I want to get into this? Like, I don't even know where to be. I feel like we have a 1,000-piece puzzle, and you're like, you dumped it on the table, and you're like, okay, let's find 2 clouds. Let's just find cloud things that look like
corners.
Clouds.
Yeah, let's go corners.
Find the corners.
Get that edge.
I mean, where do you want to start? What jumps out at you? Do we want to go like sequentially, or do you want to go with like what's happened recently? What jumps out at you?
Well, I just thought that the general sort of narrative, because I picked up on this a little bit from fans who were, as soon as the season ended, and you kind of got to celebrate that moment that Creighton has obviously been pushing for so long. But then it was like a total sort of mood change because fans realized, okay, well, players are leaving, turning pro. Couple coaches left. Like, what is going to happen now? And it's just like that sense of uncertainty for a couple weeks. And I tried to tell people, if anyone spoke with me, I was like, look, there are a ton of players available.
Right.
You know, whether it's international recruits or decommitted 2021 prospects or transfers, Creighton's not going to have a problem finding players. Now, did I expect it to, you know, succeed at the level that it has from a recruiting standpoint? Probably not. I can't admit that. But I didn't think that filling the roster would be a problem. I thought – I'm actually kind of more curious, and this is probably a conversation for later, but just sort of how the team sort of gels and grows together over the summer. I thought that was kind of the big offseason storyline. But I didn't think they'd have a problem finding players, and as it turns out, they haven't. But the process of that – yeah, I mean, it's been a roller coaster for sure if you've been following on a daily basis. Oh, so man. I totally empathize with fans who are just sort of like ready to go hide in the corner for a little bit, like unsure of what the team was going to look like. And then now they're out and everybody's celebrating.
Yeah, I think we also need to preface everything. Like, just because Creighton landed this amazing recruiting class does not mean that they're necessarily going to have a bunch of success next year. I mean, we'll get into that later on. Who knows? But I think you kind of... You have to acknowledge what is success in the moment. And I just think when you take into consideration, I mean, your Twitter mentions are probably a lot like mine, or emails a lot like mine. The sky was falling for a lot of Creighton fans. Like, people thought, given what had happened in the locker room with Greg McDermott, then what was a perceived mass exodus with the starting five all not coming back, losing two assistant coaches, there was a lot of people that were questioning, like, is this the end? Like, is it over for the Greg McDermott era? And my biggest question was, like, I totally disagreed with that, but my question was, can he still recruit? Like, can this guy, I totally agree with you, there were going to be players available, but could he get them given what was the kind of the ammo and used against him on the recruiting trail? And so for me, I think landing Kaluma, an African-American top 50 player, landing Trey Alexander, African-American top 70 player out of Oklahoma. Like, I guess for me, like, this, and then also being able to hire Jalen Courtney Williams, a young black coach, like, those things, if we're just going to address the elephant in the room, like, those were big things for me that I was like, these are legitimate questions. I have no questions about Greg McDermott, the coach, the person, if people are willing to give this guy a shot. But was that going to be able to happen? I was concerned, and so I think a lot of my concerns have been alleviated, at least in the short term, with what he's been able to do recruiting and hiring-wise.
Yeah, I would say short term. I agree with you. I don't know, because I think any individual that, based on what we've heard, you know, the people that we've talked to, I mean, you know, Greg McDermott really well, and I've talked to a lot of his former players who know him well, and obviously people in the program who know him well. And like what he said, in the opinion of those who know him the best, doesn't necessarily reflect how he feels.
Sure.
It was a poor choice of words, obviously, comparing his program to a plantation, but that's not what is in his heart. And so I think he's had the opportunity to do a lot of self-reflection. He's probably tried his best to convey that thought, that that moment doesn't define who he is, to recruits, to prospective coaches, to his current players. And I guess a lot of people are, you know, buying in, and they believe right in that. And I think that, you know, he does have a pretty strong track record of, you know, being active in the community and trying to make an impact and a positive impact on people's lives. So I think people have looked at that and obviously responded favorably. But it's kind of like one of those stories, though, Nick, that it doesn't just dissipate.
Totally agree. You know, I wanted to clear that up. I'm not insinuating that, like, well, that situation's now done. Not at all. Like, this is going to be a process. And I guess what I didn't maybe word it right. Like, there are steps in this process, and one of the steps is what we just kind of laid out: the ability to recruit and sell African American coaches or athletes on him. And
yeah, because you're kind of fighting against the perception.
Yes.
The perception, from a national perspective at least, is different than what you're trying to convey of who you are, because obviously we saw the coverage and the reaction from, whether it was talking heads on ESPN or social media sort of voices, people kind of popping into the story, saying something and then leaving. not necessarily having the full context of the situation, well, that leaves an impact. You know,
absolutely.
If Jalen Rose says something, that leaves an impact, even though Jalen Rose isn't really invested in the storyline, you know? So, and then it filters across the college basketball landscape from a recruiting perspective. So yeah, you're obviously, it shows that there are people, recruits, parents of recruits, coaches that are willing to sort of, you know, listen, I guess.
Yeah.
And hear
right.
the
Give
full story where
right.
Greg McDermott's coming from, and not just assume that everything that's being said from the outside is accurate. So I agree with you. It is a big first step.
Yes, yes. It's far from, I hate to even call it over. That almost like minimizes the comments and their impact. Like, I don't even want to, it's like, well, that's over. Like, it's like a storm that passes. Like, this is a
right.
storm that is never really going to, you hope it passes one day, but like, you know, just because Greg McDermott lands a 6'9 forward doesn't mean like, all is healed with that whole situation. I think you understand
what
I'm saying.
I felt like what you and Jalen, the new Creighton coach, and Courtney Williams talked about on your podcast a month ago was really valuable, because it was, Greg McDermott, obviously what he said was wrong and it was hurtful, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the only that's maybe it's the first thing you think about when you hear the name, but that doesn't have to be where you start and stop. Like,
sure.
Let's use this opportunity to grow as a community, as a city,
yep.
And try to have some tough conversations. And so I think that type of thing is happening within the program, or has happened within the program. And then hopefully, those who come across Greg or who he interacts with, will be impacted in a positive manner because of it. So I like, from a like a big picture standpoint, I'm like, I do hope that we do continually talk about not just Greg McDermott's growth, but the growth around the players around him and
sure.
the program in general. But I know that it can be a little bit divisive if you just sort of like dip your toe in and try to have
right.
a conversation, you know, all
right.
of a sudden, if you tweet something about Greg McDermott, like, there's going to be a little bit of an army of people who already have their minds made up. And that's the way that the world works these days. But it is, I mean, if you're a Creighton fan, I think it's encouraging that there are recruits and coaches out there who have had an open mind and have been willing to listen to Greg McDermott and hear his heart on that issue and what he has planned for them and the program going forward.
Right. I mean, it takes time. I think Mike Greenberg always has the comment of like, who you are after the comma, where it's, like John Niatawa, comma, Creighton beat recorder for the Omaha World Herald. Like, right now, at least in the moment, for some people, it's Greg McDermott, comma, and then it's what happened in the locker room at Xavier. Like, and
yeah.
it's, and listen, he earned that because he made the mistake, right? But like I said, that just because that's what it is today doesn't mean that that's what the rest of the paragraph has to be, or what it even has to be forever. But it's nevertheless, it is there for a lot of people. And I guess just for me, this is a process, and there were some significant steps taken, at least as I see it, to keep Orion Nemhard in the class, to then go out and land Trey Alexander and Arthur Kaluma and hire Jalen Courtney Williams. These are significant things that I think go a long ways in the process of, I don't even know what the process is, just the process of growing,
moving,
improving,
forward.
And moving
yeah.
forward. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and I don't even think it's just black players, Nick, too, because, I mean, I'm sure I know there were players of all races and colors that were in the moment when Greg McDermott said what he said that were disturbed by it,
Sure.
So I think it's obviously we'll focus on that. And I have not talked to any of the new recruits about this topic, because
right.
it just doesn't seem, it seems like something that you would want to really sit down and kind of like dig into. Like I said, you don't want to, it doesn't need to be dip your toe in the pool type of situation. Like, you want to get really in depth with it, because that's the only way that you're going to actually move the conversation forward. But I am curious to hear what they say.
Yeah.
And what their thoughts are on it. But obviously, if they've committed and signed, they're on board. So, I know. Fans have to feel pretty good.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com.
Isn't it funny how, saying this out loud, like how stupid I am, and that like I'm only equating this to black players, like they would be the only ones that are offended by it. Like even in my two interviews, I interviewed Jalen Courtney Williams and Ryan Miller. I asked Jalen Courtney Williams about it, but I didn't ask Ryan Miller about it. Like, shame on me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of ridiculous on my part, as I'm kind of saying this out loud here.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I think that one of the topics that I've sort of, it's kind of gone in my, like, I thought about it in my head a little bit with this, is if you're a black player or a black coach and you're associated with Creighton, you're immediately going to be looked at it from, whether it's your peers or your family members, your friends, and they're going to be asking you, okay, so how do you feel about this?
Yes.
And maybe as a white player or a coach, you don't necessarily get that question as quickly.
Yeah.
So
you're,
I don't
right.
know if you're really off base. Maybe. I think it's just a natural sort of move that we all make of, like,
sure.
Well, you're supposed to be offended by this, right? Or how do you feel?
I know, it's a weird thing, but as I'm talking to you and saying it out loud, I'm like, wait a minute, what am I processing this right? Like, I don't even know. I mean it's just it's a very layered, nuanced thing that, like you said, the way you put it, like if you just dip your toe into it, that's just like, you can't do that almost. Like, it doesn't, it's not doing anything justice. You're not going to get anything of substance from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I did kind of want to start the conversation there, because I think that was the biggest thing with this over the last 3 months. Like, what was going to happen with this, right? Like, was he going to keep his job? Okay. If he is, well, then what's going to happen with the roster and all those things? And I think a lot of it, again, in the short term, has kind of been answered. I don't know what you thought. I thought the narrative a little bit around, other than Christian Bishop leaving, that was the only player in the starting five that has transferred or left the program or decided to not come back, that I was surprised by it. I never expected Jefferson or Mahoney to come back. I didn't expect Zegarowski or Mitch Ballock to come back. So I think it was kind of unfortunate how that kind of all lined up, because it was just kind of, It was labeled like everybody's running away from Greg McDermott. Like, yeah, I think even if let's say the locker room comments never happened, I still think all these guys don't come back. Except Bishop.
You're right on that. Yeah, with the starters.
Yes. Except for Bishop. Like, I think Bishop maybe comes back, but I think maybe the comments made it easier for Bishop to kind of go, well, maybe I need to look somewhere else. But at the same time, I don't know, when you really iron out Bishop's reasoning, it makes more sense the more you think about it.
Right. I mean, I always sensed this is just sort of like happened. Lucky enough to be around the program, to see these guys practice, interact with them on a semi-daily basis. Different this year, obviously, because of the pandemic. But I did always get the sense that Christian was not fully comfortable with his role,
right,
because he felt like he had more to show. And while he did the five, undersized five in Creighton's offense, like, he really excelled there. In his mind, it was like, this isn't the best way to market my game for the next level. Like, I need to do a few more different things to showcase what I'm capable of. I always got that sense. But I thought, because they were winning and they had so much success, that you know, he'd be able to kind of like suppress that a little bit. But, you know, so that's why I'm like, well, maybe in a vacuum had the comments not happened, perhaps he does still jump and go. And then when you, but here's the other thing, Nick, this is maybe a little bit off topic, but the idea of, now, Creighton, granted, has elevated its profile, its standing. We know this. But, like, a player like Christian Bishop enters the transfer portal and his options, you know, are Kansas, North Carolina, Texas. It's kind of hard if you're if you know that you're only going to play college ball for 4 or 5 years and you have the option to play at one of those schools. Like, Davion Mintz left Creighton and went to Kentucky. I mean, like – he couldn't have done that out of high school. Christian Bishop couldn't have played it, had the option to play at Kansas or North Carolina or Texas on scholarship out of high school. So, and in that sense, it's like, because I've seen this across college sports, a lot of, you know, maybe mid-tier or borderline top 25 teams that have go-to guys on their roster or players that maybe they're the number two option. And they're jumping to places like Kansas, Kentucky, Gonzaga, and you're like, wait a second, you know, why would you leave the featured role to go to a program like that? But then you think about what that program does, the pros that it's produced, the fan support, the pageantry that goes with it, you know, like, it's pretty cool to say that you played at Texas or to say you played at Kentucky. And while it's also cool to say you played at Creighton and there's something about being committed to your team and the program, it's like, it's, I can understand the reasoning of wanting to try something new and experience college basketball from a different point of view, because it's obviously, I mean, you played at Kansas, you know, there's a difference between Kansas and Creighton. As great as Creighton is, there's a difference.
But here's, you know, what's amazing though, is you kind of lead me directly into to the significance of what has happened with this class though. Like, Creighton has a better recruiting class than Kentucky and Kansas. Like, sure. This, you know, so it's just, and for me, like, I think sometimes you, like, I've made this comment before. I made this comment after Creighton made the Sweet 16, where it's like, you can take the kid out of the Valley, but you can't take the Valley out of the kid, the Missouri Valley Conference, that is. And, like, I was oftentimes the guy that would host recruits when they came on visits. And I vividly remember when I would, you know, there was a kid named Clinton Mann that was on a visit, and he was choosing between, you know, and there was another kid, God, he ended up going to Florida. But I remember I was taking him bowling. And I was like, we're in my car, and I'm like, okay, so who, you know, what other schools are you considering? And he goes, well, Florida offered me last week. And I'm like back-to-back national champs, Florida? And he's like, yeah. And I wanted to, like, flip a U-E on Dodge Street, be like, man, you're not coming here. Like, you know, give me a break. Same thing even with, like, even so, if someone had this Clinton Mann, he ended up going to Iowa State. I'm like, oh, you got an Iowa State offer? You're not coming here. Like, I remember where if another kid had just one Power 5 offer, it was like, we're not winning that battle. And so to fast forward it now that Creighton has a top 5 recruiting class in the country, I guess I'm jaw-dropped. Like, just jaw-dropped to see that Creighton has just the profile and how the program has grown to where they have a top 5 recruiting class. Just incredible to me.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, we're really not. I will say Creighton has trended in the right direction from a recruiting standpoint. Yeah. And obviously we know the profile, the program has risen. But we're really only a couple years removed or 3 years removed from Creighton kind of being the runner up for top tier guys or being in on a guy. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, well, he's going to even go to a higher level program. So it does feel that all at once, like the dam broke in a way where, like, a lot of recruits are saying yes, when previously 2 years ago, they were saying, thank you, but I'm going to go to Kansas.
Right.
I think the difference is what Creighton's done on the court, I think, right? Like, Creighton has proven that everything that it's sold to these guys from a recruiting standpoint is possible by winning the Big East Championship in 2020, by making the Sweet 16. Everything that they're selling, you know, the offense is fun and we've got a good culture and we win. Like, now they have that and we win piece. stamped with obvious sort of examples, which maybe they previously hadn't had, or at least not as consistently as they did in a 2-year span.
Right. But because I totally agree with you, but also I think it maybe takes a while for this to take hold. I can't express how much conference affiliation matters. Like the success on the court, absolutely. Like there's a lot of, just because you're a member of the SEC or the ACC doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a top five recruiting class, but it makes a big difference. And so it's a perfect storm of a rise in profile in conference affiliation combined with what you're talking about, the success on the court and the style on the court being appealing, and then having success stories. Like recruiting is just like sales. You want to be able to say, hey, look at Tyshawn Alexander. He's on the Phoenix Suns. Hey, look at Khyree Thomas. He got drafted. He's now with the Rockets. Look at Justin Patton. He was, a top 15 or 16 pick. Look at Doug. He's in the pros. Those types of things matter in recruiting. And all of a sudden, like you said, the dam broke. Like all this stuff's been kind of building up to where it's all kind of come together at the right time. And it's just amazing to see it all come together at the right time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one thing to have sort of the pieces in place and okay, we have an opportunity here to capitalize, but then to do it, obviously you got to commend the coaching staff for that, because there's been a lot of programs who maybe have been on a precipice of taking that next step, maybe from a recruiting standpoint after a big year or a couple big years. Like when you think about Creighton, you just laid it out, all the guys they have in the pros, like when has this program had so many active NBA players kind of going at it night after night? And then you couple that with the success, the unprecedented success they've had over the last few years. Like this was a really sort of important window that the Jays were stepping into that they need to take advantage of on the recruiting trail, and to their credit, they did. And so, well, it's kind of like I'm sure for you, for a lot of Creighton fans, for me too, like it's weird to type that in top five recruiting class.
It's what Creighton surreal
brought in, but it's also like when you kind of unpack it, you're like, well, yeah, it, Creighton was trending here, and it was really in a good position to secure these types of recruits. But again, they hadn't done it before. So
right.
The fact that they did is like, okay, well, they're here now. I will say two things, though, that may have helped Creighton assemble this group, particularly the last two guys with Arthur Kaluma and Trey Alexander, playing time.
No question.
The fact that Creighton has so many.
It's wide open. Let's be honest. Wide open, man.
Right. Undefined roles. I mean, anybody coming into the program as an opportunity to start or compete for a spot in the rotation. And so those two guys, when they decommitted from their programs, Trey Alexander was an Auburn signee, Arthur Kaluma was a UNLV signee, like a lot of rosters across the country were pretty full. Because
right.
You mentioned the transfer market and how active teams were and how many programs loaded up and got some key pieces. Well, all of a sudden, some of the big name programs or some of the teams that play at the upper echelon of college basketball in a league like the Big East, as you said, conference affiliation, that matters from an exposure standpoint. Well, they're filled. And so now Creighton has a ton of opportunity to advertise and be like, hey, look at what we've done. Look at what we can do. And you get an opportunity to step in and play right away. So I think that helped. And the other thing, too, which is odd to say, because I just talked about this the other day about like Creighton not being able to host guys on campus for official visits and sell its culture, to get people into the facilities and kind of walk around and meet people. Obviously the Creighton community is really special and it matters to the players and their families. And it could have a really incredible impact just having players on campus. But, other programs, a lot they have some bells and whistles to sell maybe that Creighton doesn't, which can be appealing to certain players. And it almost kind of like leveled the playing ground of like, now we have to have conversations on Zoom and we have to talk sure. about, what we see in you as a player and who we are as people and communicate our vision to you of what we think you can become. And I feel like I've always felt like Creighton's coaching staff does a really good job of teaching know, and part of teaching
relaying their message clearly.
Exactly. Knowing how to connect and communicate with players and help them grow. And I think that in a weird way, a Zoom recruiting world actually helped Creighton because the coaches, you commend them for finding some guys who would be willing to buy into that. You know, I think about Ryan Nemhard when I talked to him over the summer after he committed to Creighton. One of the first things he said was just how excited he was once he started watching some Creighton film.
Yes.
And seeing like, okay, this is where I could fit in, and this is why my skill set fits in their offense. It's like, it feels like a lot of these players, Creighton found some guys that are just basketball junkies.
Right.
And they know their game. They know what they could be, and they see how they fit in. And Creighton's coaching staff did a good job of sort of relaying what they think they could be. So I just feel like all those conversations, maybe Creighton had a little bit of an edge because they are so good at teaching and,
because
like you said, relaying info.
Yeah, because the only thing counter to that would be the perception around Nebraska and Omaha, and people not being able to see it, and then not being able to get past. Like, am I gonna go be in a cornfield? Like, what is this? The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. Everybody that knows my athletic background, you know, as a quarterback in high school, but you know, I believe in establishing the run game, and even more than that, I believe in establishing the Runza game. That's an original Runza cheeseburger. Some onion rings, double dipped in a homemade batter, little bit of a pop to top it off. You know, in football, you establish a run. But at lunch, you establish the Runza. It's just that simple. So get out to Runza today and establish the Runza game, or check out the delicious salads. You got the chicken bacon ranch salad, sweet berry chicken salad, and my personal favorite, the Southwest chicken salad. You got to get out to Runza, establish a Runza game, or get a salad. Either way, you are going to leave satisfied. Runza makes it all better. If you remove that, like, let's be honest, if you take Creighton in a Zoom call, it's impressive. Hey, top 10 attendance. Hey, national TV every game. Hey, look at all these guys in the pros. Hey, look at these offensive numbers. Hey, you like threes? Look at this. Hey, watch this film. Pretty fun to watch, right? Like, and then Greg McDermott is really good at succinctly delivering a plan and a vision. And so like all that stuff, you're right. Like when you remove the pageantry of like, of maybe some other stuff that you would see on a campus or on a visit that kind of doesn't matter when it comes right down to your basketball decision. Creighton is a pretty appealing, has a lot of appealing things to it.
I mean, I just think of, think about Marcus Zagorowski, who was like one of those guys who all he wanted to do was get in the gym and work. And one of the reasons why he chose Creighton is just because, one, he could do that there. But I had focus on my basketball. And that was, that's what I'm coming here to do.
Right.
Primer goal number one. And these guys are all locked in and helping me sort of achieve what I want to achieve from a basketball standpoint. The system fits well. The development fits well with what I do. And I just feel like Creighton's done a really good job over the last 3-4 years finding players that have that same mentality, that know that, they've got some work to do. They've got to grind a little bit, but they're willing to do it, and they think that the coaching staff can help them. And so I think there's a lot of guys in this class that while they are higher rated and they've had more success than some of Creighton's recruits in the past on a national level, they're just a more prestigious class. It's obviously ranked really high. But I think their makeup, it seems, is very similar to some of the, former stars of Creighton basketball over the last 5-6 years that have been willing to put in the work and play team ball and kind of buy into what Creighton's selling.
Right. Not only from an intangible standpoint, also from a tangible one. You know, like you look at like, okay, John Christofilos, he's a shooter. He'd probably fill that Mitch type of role. Okay, a guy like Arthur Kaluma, a versatile 3-4, where you can see him kind of doing, he's kind of a bigger, longer, more athletic Denzel, like, that can do, you see they're fitting profiles too really well. Is there any, with this 5-man class, is there one guy that intrigues you the most? Like, and I get, like, we're going off of, like, YouTube highlights and stuff, you know, so you're like, well, this guy looks like the greatest player I've ever seen in my life, but, like, But there is something too, like Arthur Kaluma's highlights. You're like, that's pretty good. That's pretty athletic. That's pretty explosive at the rim. That's a 6'9" frame handling it. Like, there are some things that you can't take away from highlights. I mean, is there one guy that jumps out at you?
Yeah, because like Arthur Kaluma doing some stuff with the ball that I'm like, I didn't know 6'8" guys did that.
I know.
But again, I don't watch a ton of highlight films of high school prospects. So
right.
When I saw some of those highlights, like you mentioned, I'm like, oh, okay. Like,
whoa, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned longer Denzel. Like, I was thinking Kyrie almost.
Yeah,
you know? Like,
right.
But so Kaluma is impressed. They're all really impressive.
They are.
Like, they seem to be – they have some different skill sets, but generally the theme with Creighton when they try to recruit guys, Greg McDermott said this, that they value skill over anything and everything. And then once, if you can add some athleticism and some length and maybe some hops, that's even better. But you got to be able to dribble it, pass it, shoot it. And it feels like all these guys can do that. Mason, have you seen some of Mason Miller's dunks?
Yeah, Mason's a pretty good explosive finisher at the rim. Left-handed, you know, both hands. Like, he's intriguing.
I like that. I've watched the most of Ryan Nembhard.
Yeah, I like Ryan a lot. I think Ryan's going to be a really, really – Trey Alexander is going to fill – they need a wing that can score. And I think – so I think Trey's going to – I think Trey's going to hit the ground running, Trey Alexander, the guy – the kid from Oklahoma. But I think Nembhard strikes me as, you know, one of the classic cerebral Zegarowski type of, like, smart, winner, tough, skilled point guard ball handler.
I like that he's played with a lot of talented players at Montverde Academy in Florida, and he's seems to be fine with the fact that maybe they get some more of the headlines than he does. He's
right.
Just, like you said, about winning, making the right play, sort of running the show offensively. But when they needed him at times, like a few of the games that I watched, he delivered down the stretch of games, whether it's making a big-time play for someone else or driving in. And creating for himself, hitting big shots. I think he's a really good defender. Like, I think he's got a lot of potential there to be pretty tenacious. I can't wait to see or hear about the battles between him and Sharif in practice.
Boy.
I imagine they were going to be guarding each other. That's the one thing about Nembhard. I remember watching, this was back when Ty Washington was part of the class in Arizona Compass, where Ty played, matched up against Montford for a game. They matched up a couple times this year, but one of the ones I watched, and Nembhard guarded Ty. And now Ty got some shots off on him, you know,
sure.
and hit some tough ones. But, like, you kind of like that idea of
– Yeah, like, hey, I got
I'm
him.
Gonna,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to take that guy. I'm gonna try my best to go at him. And so I think Sharif obviously has a lot of that. And I think those two guys are going to quickly sort of – as you would want from point guards – they're going to kind of take the reins and lead the way for this team over the offseason and set the tone with their tenacity and their just willingness to work. So,
right.
Yeah, Nembhard was the guy when Creighton secured his commitment over last summer that I mean, I was like, he's perfect for what they do.
Yes.
Really good in the open floor, he's quick, likes to push tempo, and is a winner. And he didn't necessarily have the accolades from a recruiting standpoint, you know, from the rankings and all that initially, but I thought his commitment was big. And then as Montford went through the season and more people got eyes on him because he didn't play AAU ball because he's in Canada with the pandemic happening. Once people got more eyes on him, then his recruiting rankings rose. But I look at him. I also am kind of just a sucker for point guards anyway.
Yeah, me too. I'm drawn to them.
They have the ball in their hands more time than not, and we know what Creighton's offense is.
Right.
It's got an elite point guard running the show. So I'm like, I want to see what Ryan Nembhard can do and how he grows during his career.
Yeah. And the one thing you almost want to tell Nembhard is like, hey, man, listen, the guy who's going to be guarding you every day in practice, you won't see a better on-ball defender any game. Like, so just don't get discouraged when this dude's speeding you up, taking your cookies. Like, this is all like, this is going to help you, but like, this dude can really guard. Talk about Sharif, obviously. Like,
yeah,
this guy is, this is what he does, you know? I'm also curious, like, you know, the Christopoulos kid, you know, he's the lowest ranked, you know, of all the recruits in this class. But, like, there are some national recruiting analysts that say this is the best shooter in the 2021 class. And, you know, I think he's going to fit. Now, I don't think he's a Mitch Balick level type of a shooter. I mean, you're talking about an elite level shooter. But I think he's a really, really good shooter that this offense needs that. And what's interesting about him is I'm not sure how much film you've seen of him. He shoots a legitimate jump shot. Like it's interesting mechanically. It's not as silky smooth of a jumper, you know, like Doug and Ethan's were just like almost take your breath away. Like his is more like jump, get to the apex of it, and then shoot it almost like a Jamal Crawford type of a looking shot. But man, it goes in. And you wanna run a style that is, you know, you gotta require space, guys to stay attached to shooters and knock down threes. Like you need a guy like that.
One of the things that it's interesting, you mentioned that about his shooting mechanics just a little bit different. And maybe that allows him to make some of these contested shots that I see, because he just makes a ton of contested shots.
Agree.
At least what I've seen on, you know, his highlights.
Yeah, it's not like wide open three. Like it's like one dribble pull up, step back. Like, it's not all just, you know, he's got all day to line it up and no one's near him for a three.
Right. And so, like, they're tough shots. And that was what jumped out at me when I watched some of this stuff is because, well, that'll translate. Because obviously, sure, you'll get a few looks maybe early in your career. But eventually, once the book is out, that this guy is an elite shooter, or a good shooter, it's like you're not going to get any easy looks. So, with Christopoulos, the one thing to note about him is that he initially, when he was like a freshman, sophomore in high school, he like exploded on the recruiting scene. Like he was a top tier recruit, you know, a potential national guy that would be recruited by not just Pac-12 teams, but across the country. And then he suffered an injury. I think it was a foot injury or a toe injury. And he was out for like 10 months, like right in that prime stretch of development when guys can make a big leap. And so he wasn't able to play, and his rankings, quote unquote, you know, whatever that means, suffered because of it. So I am curious just from a development standpoint, like where he is on that track, you know, cause some guys peak. Where will he peak? Is he still got more? Everyone has more room to grow, but he might actually have more room than people think.
Right.
Because he missed out on so much time, which is, usually that stretch is really valuable for guys. So, I think he's a better athlete than people think as well. So, he's another intriguing dude for sure.
Well, and then, so the other guys in the class then are, you know, the two transfers. You got, you know, Keyshawn Fizell from McNeese State, who came with Jalen Courtney Williams, was, you know, had recruited him and, you know, 6'8", big, strong guy. I want to start with him. Like he, I think he is really necessary because, you know, without him on the roster, they're young, they're thin, they're not very physical. And I think he provides some maturity. He provides some strength. He provides a bigger body. Like, you know how it is. Like, you get into the nitty-gritty of the Big East and you're taking on Xavier. Like, you need a big dude that can bang. Like, Keyshawn could provide that role. So I think he, you know, I'm not sure exactly what his role looks like other than that. Like, but I think he's kind of he fills something that I think they needed.
Not only in games, but in practice.
Yeah.
Like Ryan Kalkbrenner is going to benefit a ton from having a guy like Keyshawn Fizell to go at one-on-one in games. And obviously Ryan, we saw flashes of what he can be as a freshman last year. And I think he's in store to take a really big jump this next season at the five position. But if you don't have that, like he's going to have a veteran who's played a ton, who's been a part of a Power Five program before, who knows all the tricks, you know, and, right. And like you said, has that size and strength that Ryan Kalkbrenner is going to see on a daily basis in league play. So like, I don't want to minimize the impact of Keyshawn because I do think that he's going to help the team on the court in games, but I'm also just like, dang man, a guy like Ryan Kalkbrenner, Because I always go back to Justin Patton and the stories that Justin Patton used to tell about getting worked by Jeffrey Grozel during his redshirt year.
Right.
And where would Justin Patton have been if he didn't have those valuable minutes in practice without, you know, where he was having to figure things out against, like, basically a grown man and Jeff Grozel, you know, every day. And now, you know, Keyshawn's going to be able to provide that for Kalkbrenner, who is, you know, obviously going to be a feature guy for Crane's offense and defensively too. So I think that's where I think that matters. And I'm intrigued about his role. Yeah. I mean, like, he looks like he could maybe even be a five out guy where he handles.
I was told
bit.
He's more skilled than you think.
Yeah.
I was told that. I was told that he's not like, don't think he's Charles Oakley or something like that. Like, he's just going to come here and four hard fouls, four rebounds and go drink a Gatorade. Like, he's got a little more skill than you think.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, a version of Christian Bishop in a way. Like, Christian was really good at that, and I don't want to compare anybody to him because of...
No, but that part of the offense, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So you want to have that guy, and maybe he steps into it.
Right. Hey, John, I am... I get it's Division II, but Ryan Hawkins is intriguing because I don't care that it's Division II. If you have a career record of 124-7, and you won... what, two or three national championships? In the national championship game, he had like 31-13 or whatever it was. He was
19, I think.
31-19. Like, so he is the man on a team that won 124 games, only lost seven, won a couple of national championships. Like, they need a veteran guy that's been through some of those wars, albeit it's Division II, but nevertheless, experience is experience. And you look at his skills, and it's like, I don't want to, like, he's not Doug. He's not. But, like, some of the stuff he does is, like, in that Doug mold of, like, inside out, can shoot it, crafty, 6'7". You could put him in a small ball five if you wanted. He's probably more of a four. Like, I think he's going to play. I think he's going to be a really important guy, too.
I guess the biggest question I have is, do those interior moves where he's shown a lot of creativity and craft, like Doug was so good at angles,
right,
and knowing how to like work his way to the rim and finish in different ways that, you know, defender wasn't expecting, like, and he has some of that. So, but can he translate it in just such a short amount of time to the highest level of college basketball? That I'm curious about that, but you know, I think he's actually more athletic than you would think, you know, right. For a D2, you're like, oh, D2 guy, D2 big, you know, like, what could he do? Like, the numbers say that he's a pretty good defender. He won a couple Defensive Player of the Year awards at that level. And he's a good shooter, like 46%.
On a lot of attempts.
You'll take that as a four already.
Right.
And you couple that with what you mentioned, the experience, the winning sort of culture that he was a part of and the example that he's going to set. But how versatile of a scorer can he be in the Big East? I don't know that, but there's a possibility that he could make a significant impact there. But
you're right. Like, can he finish over Jermaine Samuels? Can he finish over, you know, like, it's different. It's different, but like, oddly enough, like, when you think about Hankins from Xavier, you think about Struess from DePaul, like, we've actually seen more guys make that D2 to D1 leap than you think. It's a huge leap, but I just think this guy has the skills, and when he's deployed in the space and the X's and O's that Greg McDermott can put forth for him, like, I'm very, like, when I eventually get to go watch a practice, the number one guy I want to see first is him. I just want to see if it, like, what it looks like.
Well, and the one thing to note about D2 is, you know, the top end of D2 definitely bleeds into the bottom end of D1.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, the worst teams in D1 would not win a D2 championship.
Right.
So, and it is always tough to know exactly how D2 guys will translate, and some of it might just be specific to the guy. But, you've mentioned there's some success stories in this league alone, but across college basketball for sure. And so he can do it. And like, he's been – I mean – he was like a 5 or 6 sport athlete in high school. I mean, just played everything, you know, just like he's got sort of that legendary status back home. And what is he from? Atlantic, Iowa, just about an hour away down I-80. So he's a good athlete. I think that'll translate. It's just a matter of all the other skills that he used to torture some of those guys at D2. Will that work at the Big East level?
Some of it might. I remember
this
would have been way back. Obviously, when I tell the story, you'll know how far this was back. Right when the Metro All-Star Summer League thing started to happen in the Omaha area with a lot of the Creighton players and the Nebraska players and the former pro players, I was heading into, I think, my senior year. Kyle Korver was on my team. Kyle would come back, and he'd only played a couple of games, but Kyle was on my team. And at this time, so this would have been like 2006, 2007 in that area, I want to say South Dakota or South Dakota State, one of those schools that I thought was Division II at the time. They brought their entire team. Okay? Now, there is an inherent advantage when, I mean, they're running like sets and they have like defensive principles yeah. and all that shit, you know, like, but this is a D2 team and we had to battle. Me and Kyle, like, basically it hit a point in the game where we were like, Kyle, you have to win this game for us. And Kyle ended up showing everybody like, oh, this is an NBA player. Like, it was actually a moment where I was like, oh, you want to poo-poo? Like, all he can do is shoot. It's like, no, not really. Like, he can do a lot more than just shoot a three. But, like, I bring that up to be like, Kyle Korver, NBA guy, me, I was a starter on a, you know, a mid-major team. Like, we had to battle to beat this Division II team. And, like, I've always kind of felt like, man, there's some D2 guys that are ever bit as good as some of these D1 guys, just for whatever reason, they fall through the cracks and they end up there, and maybe Hawkins is one of those dudes.
Yeah, yeah, and he's kind of that mentality where, like, I think he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder that he wants to prove that he can do it. I think while he enjoyed his time at D2 and he's a legend, you know, on his campus, There's a part of him. I think I got to talk with him for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, you know, when he committed. Like, I think there's a part of him that's really looking forward to this challenge and getting an opportunity to maybe, you know, represent for the D2 world a little bit.
Sure.
And show that some of those guys can play. So, yeah, we'll see. I guess with Hawkins, because of what he's accomplished, I want to see like what he's like from a mentality standpoint, from a psyche standpoint. Like, right. Is he a dude that like doesn't take crap from anybody?
Or is he going to be wide eyed? Is he going to be like, oh right. boy, you know?
Or is he just going to, you know, kind of just be part of it, you know, just kind of go with the flow.
Right.
Like I'm kind of curious to see where that, and I don't know if it matters.
It does. Your mentality matters. It does yeah. a little bit though. Like I have a hard time feeling like a guy, again, it's a Division II level, like a guy that had that kind of a record, 124-7-7 career record, won multiple national championships, and was the guy every night that the other team said, we have to stop this guy, and he still kicked everyone's ass. I have a hard time yeah. feeling like he's going to walk onto the floor and be timid, and you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying he's going to walk onto the court like Marcus Foster and be like, I'm going to bust everyone's ass. You know what I mean? Like, but I don't know. Like, usually basketball, it's one of my favorite things about basketball. It's like to be the guy, it kind of there's a non-negotiable level of alphaness that you got to have that I just can't imagine he doesn't have some of that.
Right. And I actually, it would be helpful, I think, for this team to have that piece because they'll be looking, you'll have freshmen who are going to go through tough days and have moments when they're discouraged and they're going to need someone to be a tone setter and to say, you know, hey, we're not going to go through the motions with this today. You know, we gotta work to get better. They had like six guys doing that last year.
Right, right.
Like they could share the burden of leadership.
No question. That's a good point.
And now it's like, who's going to take, I mean, you know, Sharif's going to be that guy. And it's possible that one or two of the freshmen might, but emerge. I do think that there might be sort of, you know, an importance for a guy like Ryan Hawkins who has so much experience and has a track record of winning success. Like, they could help. It'd be helpful if he were vocal and able to take guys under his wing and lead them.
Do you what actually, from what you know, what happened with Al Huss? Like, he was close to leaving. He was being courted by some power conference schools. I think Illinois was after him. Like, I mean, certainly a very, very – I think he's one of the most – he's kind of one – you know, we talk about unsung heroes. We always talked about Paul Lusk, and deservedly so. Like, Al Huss has been a beast of a recruiter and an assistant coach for Greg McDermott. And, you know, I mean, sometimes it's pretty telling when other – you know, these other Big Ten schools are trying to pluck you away. But, like, sounds like he was considering it, maybe leaving?
He was definitely considering it. It's a little bit tough because some of this stuff is probably not for public consumption.
And sure.
It's why I haven't like written an in-depth piece or story about the
news of him. Yeah, I know. Like, I know. It's weird. I don't even want to ask about, I was like, do I even ask? Cause I don't even want to like, I didn't want to pry and even ask some of my connections of like, hey, what happened with this?
Because it's personal, man. It's a job, and, right. And there's a lot of things that go into that. It,
yeah.
Whether it's your family or where you're living and the relationships and what you want to be as a coach as you're building up professionally. But there were suitors, interested parties who were looking to hire Al Huss, and Illinois was one of them.
Yeah, that's it's a one seed that won the Big Ten. Like,
yeah, that was Illinois won the Big Ten and had some. I think Illinois lost all three of his assistants over the offseason. Like, two went to Kentucky, one went to Gonzaga. So, like,
right.
Good program. They got a lot of resources, a ton of tradition. And Coach Huss is from Illinois. Like, he's got a lot of family ties to that area. His parents lived there. Like, when Coach Huss, his playing career ended at Creighton, his first job out of college, he worked for his grandfather's company in Decatur, Illinois, which is, like, basically Illini country. Like,
yeah.
It's right there in next to Champaign. And so he's got a ton of family there. So it was like kind of like it was a little bit of a tug of pull there from an emotional standpoint for him, I think, because you got family on one hand and then you got your Creighton family on the other hand. And like where do you want to go? And so ultimately he decided to stay at Creighton and the Jays are fortunate because not only does he make an impact on the recruiting trail, we've seen that. He was the lead recruiter on probably at least half the guys on the roster at the moment.
Yeah.
I'd have to count it all up to, I think at one point during the offseason, I wrote 7 of 10. So,
man.
He's critical there, but I think he's made an impact offensively.
I do too.
Because he's kind of been Greg McDermott's right-hand man there, but some of the things that the Jays have done, different schematic twists and alterations that they've implemented, like, Coach Huss has been a part of that. He's a pretty analytics-driven guy. Like, he studies it and studies the game. Like, I think he's grown there. And also, from a relationship standpoint, I feel like he's really comfortable here with this team, with these guys. And he helped the team. He was named the interim coach when Greg McDermott was suspended for 4 days in March,
Right.
He helped the team. He helped navigate the team through a difficult situation. He's really respected by the players. So important that the Jays got him to stay and that he decided to stay. And that was one of those stories in the office. It was just a little bit, it's tough because a lot of that, as a reporter, I want to know it.
Right.
I think fans are interested in it. I think it's an important story, but then again, you do have to be respectful.
Totally
understand. Of the coach.
Yeah,
a person and a human, and it's got to make a lot of tough.
And he didn't go. He didn't take the job either. So it's like, well, okay. So there was a report, a rumor that maybe had some legs. That also, I totally understand. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at White Castle Roofing, and I've owned two homes in my life: one in Omaha, and now one in Lincoln. And both times, when I had some damage to my roof, White Castle Roofing was who I trusted with the job. I had some hail damage to my roof in Omaha. White Castle took care of that and did a great job. And then I had a leak with my skylight in Lincoln. My guy Ben from White Castle was able to come over, take a look at things, get the pieces needed to fix it, communicated every step, and boom, the crew was over and knocked it out quickly. Done and done. The crew was amazing, man. They're fast. They're efficient. They were awesome. Cleanup was a top priority. And most importantly, they did a fantastic job. You can't trust just anyone with your roof. And trust me, you can trust White Castle Roofing. Check them out online, whitecastleroofing.com. That's whitecastleroofing.com. White Castle Roofing, built with trust, proven by time. From my understanding, I think it was Huss's idea to implement Christian Bishop's five out stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, that kind of unlocked, and you could say like a lot of Christian success and the team success hinged on that.
In 2020 and then into 2021, yeah.
Yeah.
The hit and chase.
Yep, the hit and chase. That's all Huss, you know? Like, that was all his idea. And, you know, I think anything jump out at you? A couple more things we'll let you run here. Anything jump out at you with the other two assistants, Jalen Courtney Williams, Ryan Miller? It sounds like Ryan Miller is super connected recruiting-wise as well. And then, you know, Jalen Courtney Williams, it's like, I mean, the guy's 28 years old. Like, it's pretty amazing his rise in the recruiting or in the coaching world. But I get the sense that you could I don't think it's too bold of a comment to say this is arguably the best recruiting trio of assistants Creighton's ever had.
Yeah, you might be right on that because, well,
maybe the D-Rock Preston Murphy group was pretty good, but like,
yeah,
but this group's pretty good.
Okay, I got a comment on both of the new hires. Jalen Courtney Williams, I think, now I have to go back and check it because there have been some new hires in the conference, but I think he's the youngest assistant coach in the Big East.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So that's like, okay, Creighton's going to bring him on. But being around that program, Nick, like I do feel like youthful energy and that ability to relate to guys, like, I remember talking to, name the guy. And I've had a conversation with a player who's talked about connecting with John McHugh Ty Nurse. You know, Some of the younger people who are involved with the program. Like, yeah, age,
it matters.
The longer you've been in, you have more experience and you know sort of how to play the game. And maybe there's things from a tactical standpoint that you're just more familiar with. But there's also like that relatability thing. And for adding some new life and energy into the program, I think that can matter a ton. And making guys feel comfortable within the program and just having like a guy that you can connect with a little bit more. So I think that that's where his value is going to be, at least initially. And then Ryan Miller, man, he's worked at Auburn before. This is pre-Bruce Pearl for Auburn, you know? So yeah. Not the easiest place to recruit to, Auburn. New Mexico, which has a ton of history and tradition, but it is in New Mexico.
Yeah.
UNLV, again, a lot of history, but it's not a Power 5 school, and it's in Vegas, but you've got close access to players, but it's a little bit different place to recruit to. And then TCU, which when they took over, it was like winless and, you know, at the bottom of the Big 12. So he's had so many different experiences in his coaching career of places that are just different. To try to sell the guys and make pitches to and bring them on campus and, hey, this is what we want to do. And he's had success.
Yes.
And so you couple all that experiences, all the experiences he's gained over the course of his career. And now he's at a place like Creighton, which is sort of peaking from a program success standpoint across its whole history. Like it's as good as it's ever been. And I mean, obviously, the proof's in the pudding already. They've gotten some really good
absolutely
players, since he's been on staff. So, yeah, they were both obviously important hires and eager to get to know them a little bit more and see how they impact the program. But those are the two things that stood out to me about those two.
I forgot to ask you about Antoine Jones. It came out, I think, yesterday that he has announced that he is transferring. I was a little surprised, but then the more I thought about it, I kind of wasn't, like, for whatever reason, and this is kind of the how it goes sometimes. For whatever reason, it just never really clicked for him.
And it's so weird, Nick, yeah. Man, because I remember it'll always forever be ingrained in my head. This practice, it was a team scrimmage, so it was like the starters against the reserves, and Antoine Jones was giving it to Creighton starters. Like this was like. His redshirt year, preseason training camp. And like, when I say given, like Damian Jefferson couldn't guard him. Denzel Mahoney couldn't guard him. Like nobody could guard this dude. He was like every time down, getting into the paint, drawing fouls, hitting three pointers. I mean, I was looking at that. I was like, man, he is going to be a great piece for this team.
I thought the same thing.
He never really got that consistent playing time to maybe show that. And, it's understandable,
right?
Granted, because of what Creighton had, the veterans they had, how well connected that group was, and it's a little bit tough maybe to find your flow in a game when you're coming in off the bench and you only play for 2 or 3 minutes and you got to sit for like 10 minutes.
Really hard.
So that's probably part of it. But I do feel like Creighton fans never got the true Antoine Jones experience. And for that, I feel bad for them and him because he was a really fun player to watch, especially when he got hot and got going. And we saw a little glimpse of that against Xavier where he started talking a little bit and he was having fun and engaging with the fans. And it's unfortunate. But like you said, he never – like, I know Creighton plays positionless basketball essentially, but it did feel like his game just never quite that – round peg in a square hole or whatever the analogy is. Like, it just never quite fit this past season. And maybe they could have found a way to make it work, but he's going to go and find a new place to land. So best of luck to him. But, he was one of my favorite players to cover, man, because just, like, his personality was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just, unfortunately, like, when you watch him, the ball stuck in his hands a little bit. Like,
it did, yeah.
It stuck in his hands a little bit. And then I noticed early on, and this happens for coaches, and it just he got into that world where he got into the Devin Brooks, Ronnie Harrell area with Greg McDermott, where, like, he just, for whatever reason, Coach McDermott never fully trusted those guys, even though they were talented. I mean, Devin Brooks, a lot of talent. Ronnie, I always loved Ronnie. I thought Ronnie had a lot of game. But for some reason, like, there are certain coaches that, like, with certain players that they just, like, they can't fully let you play through mistakes. They don't fully trust you in a big spot. And I think for whatever reason, Antoine found himself in that place in Greg McDermott's head. And when you get in that spot with a coach, it's hard to get out of.
And especially without a non-conference.
Yes.
To kind of, like, prove yourself in maybe moments that aren't as critical or to work through some things as a player of, like, okay, well, coach is on me to not make this mistake, but I got to work it out of my game, you know? So I got to get some reps in trying to become a little bit different and become the player that coach wants me to be. It's like, he didn't get those opportunities. Creighton basically after week one was in win now mode.
Right.
We cannot.
No, it's a great point.
You know?
Yeah. Like the COVID no non-con killed a guy like Antoine.
Yeah, he just couldn't. He never could settle in, and so I think he ended up, like, he had, like, the second best assist rate on the team.
Right.
Like, he could, when he saw a guy, he was really creative with his way of finding the guys and getting the ball to him. Maybe the turnovers increased a little bit as the season went on, but you saw flashes, and it's just trying to become consistent with it. That was a tough part for him. And I thought this year maybe he'd get that opportunity, but he's decided to go. So,
I mean, the last thing I was going to ask you was, and I feel like I want to abort this question because it's like expectations for next year. It's like, I don't even know. I mean, like, I feel like I want to cop out and be like, can I see a couple of games and then kind of answer that question? Because it's, I think you wrote it in your write-up with Trey Alexander's signing of what, 7 of the 13 scholarship players are going to be freshmen. And so they're,
and then Kalkbrenner, who's sophomore, but he's kind of a freshman.
Right. So they're super talented, but they're super young. And what that all, I mean, they got to gel, they got to come together, they got to grow up, they got to mature, like, what all that looks like in terms of pegging an expectation, I don't know. Like, are you ready to be like, I think the expectation is this? Or are you going to cop out with me and be like, let me see a couple of practices and a couple of games?
That's kind of how I feel. Like, I've seen some there's a ceiling, I think, for teams that are this young.
Yes.
In college basketball. Like, you're probably not going to win a conference championship. Now, I they could prove me wrong. When I was in college, I went to Purdue, and this group of, I think Purdue at the time had 4 freshmen. It was Robbie Hummel was part of the class.
Right.
And that group went all the way to the end of the season battling, I think it was Michigan State for a Big Ten title, maybe Wisconsin. Like, it was, they showed up in big time games, big time atmospheres, and played extremely well. And, you know, proved a lot of people wrong. But it's hard, especially in the Big East, which is so veteran-laden. You know, it's been a developmental league since it recalibrated and reformed. Like, a lot of teams have maybe gotten some guys who are a little bit under the radar and worked with them. And by the time they're juniors and seniors, they've been stars. That's kind of been the blueprint for not just Creighton, for everyone in the league. And the experienced teams tend to be the most successful. So there's going to be, in my mind, I see just a little bit of a cap there, but
I agree.
Some groups, if they gel, you never know. And that's kind of what I would imagine Creighton's hoping for. And the one thing that because in my head, I'm like, okay, let's compare it to 2018, right?
Yep.
Like that group was really young and they lost a lot of close games, and just there were the little things that they were maybe not quite sharp enough on that led them to ultimately finishing just shy of the NCAA tournament in the NIT. Like, I could see it playing out similarly, but I remind myself, I think this team might be more talented just from a raw talent standpoint. At least that's what the recruiting rankings would suggest. So maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. I don't know. I don't know how to set the expectations.
I don't either.
Like, I don't think we've ever seen one, certainly not here at Creighton, but even across college basketball. I mean, like, Kentucky and Duke have been crazy young before, but they've also had like five NBA draft picks that next year, you know, they're lottery picks. Their freshmen were. They weren't guys who, as it's the case in this class, while they are good, they do need some time to get seasoned and to add some weight and, you know, just kind of get acclimated to college ball. So I don't know, man. It does feel like a team that's got NCAA tournament potential, but it feels also like maybe a wide-ranging outcome type group where it could go really good or it could go kind of poorly.
I'm certainly not just tossing this year aside coming up. But I'm more so looking at this group and thinking about 2 years from now. And I do hope, and it's going to be challenging with the new transfer rules, that guys can leave and be eligible right away. Listen, it's wide open, but there's going to be some talented guys that maybe aren't playing a lot. Just because, I mean, you can't play 12 guys, right? Like, yeah. Coach McDermott's going to settle into a 7-8-9-man rotation, and that's what it's going to be. I do hope that if they can keep this group, a good core of these young guys together, I do think moving forward over the course of like the latter stages of next season, then into year two and maybe even into year three of these young core guys, like now I think we're talking about something. But that's what's going to be, that's what's so damn challenging now about this new transfer rules is I think, you know, continuity is going to be even harder. But man, with the talent on the roster, if they can stick together and gel and grow, I think now you think about 2 years from now, you're like, uh-oh, look out.
Or even the end of the year.
Right.
You know, the one thing about that 2018 team, now they had a couple, like Ballock and Alexander were sophomores, so they had a little bit more experience, obviously, than this group. But that, it was, what, it was 2018-19? That team got better at the end of the year. Like, Martin Crumple, I guess they maybe don't have a Martin was amazing at the end of that season,
right?
You know, and they won five in a row and almost worked themselves. They beat Marquette on the road.
You could see it. You could see it, you know?
Yeah. You could see the growth and the improvement and all of the things that they'd spent all season talking about with, you know, the defensive principles, being in the right spot and working together as a unit and, you know, figuring things out offensively to make some big time plays down the stretch. It all came together at the end, and you never quite know when it's going to come together for a team like this, a young team like this, but it could be sooner than expected. So,
you never know.
But there will be growing pains.
No question.
It's important, and there's going to be some stretches of play where you're, as a fan, you're probably just like, oh my gosh, it's
right.
So frustrating.
Right.
Because it's like, they could be this, but they're not, and you just have to be patient with it. And so I'm eager to hear what Coach McDermott has to say, probably mid-season or maybe even preseason, once he's got a chance to kind of work with them on the court a little bit. Of like, I think he's going to be really fired up because
it's exciting, man.
We had some great conversations in that, you know, 2018 season or 2018-19 season where he was talking about teaching.
Right.
I think he lives for that, man. We talked about it at the top of this conversation about
how good
of a communicator he is. Like, I think he loves that piece of being able to help guys grow and work with a group of guys to get them to improve. And then all of a sudden on the back end, you get to enjoy it. So I think he's going to roll up his sleeves and have a lot of fun with these guys.
And every practice is going to be competitive as hell.
Yeah.
Because every job's up for grabs, right? Like, I mean, like literally you assume guys like Sharif, Alex O'Connell, and Kalkbrenner are going to kind of lead the way initially. And like, you'd be surprised if game one, though, the starting five doesn't feature those three guys, right? But you never know, dude. Like, I mean, and so I see this as like a super, every practice, everybody's going to have to bring it. And that's going to be fun too. So this is gonna be
another thing too that stands out about this team too, Nick, is like they're kind of long. You know, maybe aside from the point guard spot, but every other position, it's like the longest team that I feel like Creighton's ever had. Assuming, you know, you got Ryan Kalkbrenner in the center spot, who's 7'7" wingspan.
Right.
And then it's 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", 6'8". And Alex O'Connell's what, 6'6"? And if he plays even some two guard, he's capable maybe of doing that. But you have a 6'5" Rati Andronikashvili at the two potentially, or a 6'4" Trey Alexander, who looks like has some length. That's intriguing to me too. Like, I don't know how that impacts the play at all, but I think it was a goal of the staff when they recognized. I mean, it's a trend across college basketball, across the sport, NBA
yeah,
too.
Length,
you know, like,
yeah, absolutely.
You
want it,
length matters, wingspan. Like, you hear people talking about that all the time. It feels like Creighton's getting longer, and finding guys that who are 6'8", 6'9", that can do a lot of things and not just be sort of plotters in the middle, right?
Right.
Like, they can move and dribble and make some jumpers. Like, it's a really sort of intriguing roster, how they fit it all together. I could imagine them having multiple different lineups and mixing and matching based on an opponent. So we'll see. It seems like they've got a lot of options available with this group.
Well, so there you go. That was when someone said, "Hey, what's new?" There we go. Hour and 15 minutes later, that's what's new over the last two or three months of Creighton basketball. I think we covered it all there pretty much, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate you being willing to have me on your podcast. I love hearing your perspective and talking hoops with you.
Absolutely, right back at you.
You know the game. You played it, right? So I always appreciate your perspective. Like, I could go down the line on each guy and pick your brain about his strengths and weaknesses for hours.
I know. Yeah, that's the problem. We could go a whole nother hour. Like, we could easily go. Yeah, because we didn't even get into some of the returners and what the steps they need to take. But like,
right.
I guess we'll catch up later in the summer and we'll dive back into that stuff. And by then, who knows what other news will kind of have accumulated by at that point.
I tell people this all the time, man. I talked to a new commit during the College World Series. It's gone that late,
right?
You know, where in terms of rosters still in flux. And I feel like this year is different than any other because the transfer portal just has more people in it. And there have been more coaching changes maybe than, I don't know what the number is, but it's feeling there's been a lot of upheaval. The coaching carousel spun maybe more than it has in recent years. And so it may not be over.
Yeah, right? Seriously, John, it might not be. Like, you might have to be writing a story about another roster acquisition here in the next couple of weeks. Who knows? Like,
exactly.
Who knows? So we'll, I guess we'll save a little meat on the bone for another time, but hey, I think the world of you. Appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. And, we'll catch up soon, my man.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John. All right, my thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.